This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Our traveling fanboys. We are the hard traveling fanboys. We do shows just to hit our mark to maintain our weekly status. Look out! Here come the traveling fanboys.
But how long can that goal really keep us going, Greg?
Until episode 200.
Are we giving stuff away right now? Are we telling tales out of school?
We're not telling tales out of school. We're implying tales out of school.
We are openly contemplating tales out of school.
So why, Nick, do you suspect I might have been humming that tune at the beginning of our broadcast?
I have a good indication that it might be. Now that we have bid farewell to Shazam month and Captain Marvel month and Avengers month and X month, I think it might be Spider month.
Do you realize what this means, Nick?
It means we are ever approaching having to come up with a fourth weekly
exactly
rotational topic,
right?
And we ain't come up with a damn idea yet.
That's exactly right.
Everybody keeps saying, "Oh, why don't you just do the DC movies? Why don't you just do the DC movies?" Quite frankly, one, we don't want to, and two, most of them suck.
Well, I got
DCEU movies. If you're doing the whole interconnected universe thing,
well, hell, by that measure, why not go back to do all the DC movies? Going back to we're gonna go back to the serials. What do you want from us, people?
Yeah,
what are we gonna do?
We're gonna do the animated movies.
Kirk Allen Superman. Yeah, actually, that's not a bad idea, Nick. Maybe that's something to look into.
Helen Slater Supergirl.
Actually, I do want to see that movie. You know, you're actually kind of selling me on this idea, Nick.
Maybe we'll do it. Maybe we won't. But the point is, it's our prerogative to decide what the hell we're going to do and when we're going to do it. We don't need the listeners telling us what to do unless we ask you to. We didn't ask, so shut up.
Now, in fairness, they did tell us to do the MCU watch.
Yeah, but that was a good idea.
So we just have to go into the lab. We have to do some work. We have to run some tests.
Oh God, work.
You know, we got to figure out what it's gonna turn into.
Let's hope this podcast cannot become work, Greg. That would be the worst.
Yes, very much so. Very much so. The further away it gets from fun, the worse it gets. The further away
200 feels.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I just want to say, Nick. Well, I'll save that for another time.
No, go ahead. Now I'm intrigued.
Well, I was just going to comment on the rigors of the weekly schedule for the hard traveling fanboys over the course of these episodes. I can see
where this is going a mile away, and yet I'm going to let it continue. Please continue.
Well, I'm going to take a little bit of a different approach.
No, I know where this. We haven't even talked about this, but I'm 99% sure I know where this is going to wind up.
You don't know
how hard it is to be the hard traveling fanboys. Now, people, you may think we rehearsed that before. We did not. We haven't even discussed Matt Hardy's YouTube promos. And yet, based on Twitter likes alone, I knew where Greg was going as soon as he started talking.
Man, if people have been following this show, people really, all they need to know about Matt Hardy's career, they could really learn from listening to the show, because I believe it was, when we first started in 2016.
Yeah, I think the Broken Universe was
the Broken Universe. Yeah. And right when the beginning of the Broken Universe is kind of when we started our show, and it influenced our references there. And now, once more, we've come full circle as Matt Hardy has yet again reinvented himself.
And this isn't even on television. This is just on YouTube.
This is just on Twitter.
Twitter.
This is a guy getting himself over through Twitter. Imagine that. I'm sure they'll do something with him. They won't.
No, they won't.
But they should. But nonetheless, we are here of course, as we are every week in the Hard Traveling Studios, with an abbreviated edition of Countdown. Now, you may notice, once we get through this episode, we are only going to be doing a countdown. No rundown, no reading and watching, none of the usual rigmarole. No appearances from Mr. Ross. He couldn't make it to the studio today. And this is all because we're trying to get Nick packed up and ready to go on his big vacation.
Yeah, I'm actually, this is being recorded in advance. I've got a week of beach ahead of me. And I must be honest, not the biggest fan of the beach, but I am looking forward to not working for a week primarily. So
No, you're more a fan of the old FX series Son of the Beach.
Son of the Beach. Or the Leonardo DiCaprio film The Beach.
I don't know what that is.
Well, Leonardo DiCaprio was in a film about a beach, and it was called The Beach. As I recall, it was some sort of cult or, I don't know, a cult or maybe like a hobo community that lived on the beach, and they were
Hobo community.
They were
good lord.
They were nefarious in some way, and he got mixed up in them, and so on and so forth. It was pretty boring, but what can you do?
Well, that notwithstanding, we're not here to talk about Leonardo DiCaprio or hobos, certainly. We are here to talk about The Amazing Spider-Man. Or, if you prefer, The Spectacular Spider-Man.
What about The Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man?
Or The Web of Spider-Man.
Mm.
Or Peter Parker Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. Or Miles Morales Spider-Man.
Or even The Ultimate Spider-Man.
Mm. Which one?
Let's go with Ultimate Spider-Man 2, Electric Boogaloo. The Bull of the Woods, if you will. But we are here to talk about Spider-Man, and we're here to count down a topic that is sure to be controversial. And you know, there's nothing that we don't love here on the show more lately than controversial lists, Nick.
Absolutely.
And in this case, we're going to be counting down our selections for our five favorite Spider-Man villains. Each of us, Nick and I, will provide our own lists of five Spider-Man villains that appeal to us, that we've enjoyed the stories of over the years. And we are going to be limiting these primarily to the printed page. So we're not going to be judging them based on their butcherings in movies or what have you, or their, in the case of the Vulture, they're greatly exceeded versions in the movies. We're only going off of what's on the page.
Notice you use the Vulture there and not your other controversial opinion that I'm sure we'll get into here shortly.
My other controversial opinion.
Yes, you are. You would say that the Vulture was greatly enhanced.
Yes.
By being put in the film, and because he's not very good on the comic
right.
page, right? You have that's a correct. Controversial opinion about another villain that's been featured in a film who you don't believe is very good on the comic printed page.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. I've said it before, and I'll stand by it.
And we'll have an opportunity to get into that. Guaranteed.
We'll have an opportunity to get into that. And you can tweet. And by the way, I'm going to go ahead and put this out there, Nick. I welcome it. I welcome any people that want to engage me in a Twitter beef regarding my list. And if you got a problem with my list, I want you to go on to Twitter.com. And I want you to wait until I get my list, obviously. And then I want you to tweet me at JRSBBQ and let me know what you feel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I'm going to put that out there. All right. Now, let's get this.
Are you trying to fill JR's Twitter feed with primarily young, primarily male, primarily defiant men?
I'm just saying. I think that may happen. That may happen. Plus, I also just like to imagine none of this will make any sense. So I just like to, well, quite frankly, you're Pet Coon Goofy. I don't know who or what an Electro is.
Oh, Lord.
I know a Mr. Electricity, Steve Regal, wrestler from the AWA in the 80s. But let's get this list cracking, Nick. You want to start or should I?
I'll let your inferior list get started.
Well, I'm going to start us off rolling, buddy. I'm going to start us off with a little bit of controversy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'll be honest with you. I don't like a lot of Spider-Man villains.
Yeah, this is. We should probably start with this before we ever actually get into the list. I made the comment earlier today that I think, unquestionably, in my view anyway, Spider-Man has the second best rogues gallery in all of comics. And Greg proceeded to list like 35 shitty rogues galleries that he likes better than the Spider-Man rogues gallery.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Yes. I mean, you look at the rogues galleries of characters like the X-Men.
Laughable.
You look at the rogues get out of here. The rogues gallery
a
is
a rogues gallery
like,
so deep that every time it's adapted, they do the same villain over and over again.
Well, that's like saying Spider-Man's is so deep that every time it's adapted, they do Norman Osborn with his head in
Norman
a jar.
Osborn, Harry Osborn, the Sandman, the Lizard, the Vulture,
yes.
Electro.
How many of them have been good?
Venom.
How many of them have been good?
I mean, like seven different ones have made it to the made it actually
good,
made
Nick?
It off the printed page. Whereas the X-Men, all they have is Magneto.
How many of them have been good?
It's like saying that like it's the same thing with Superman. You do Lex Luthor seven times every time there's a damn Superman movie.
And it's not anything to do with the comic book. It's to do with Hollywood producers and what they want. Why does the Batman movies have the Joker every time?
They don't.
They don't. Every Batman reboot has had the Joker in it. 60s, 89, 2008.
Yes, but they have other villains as well. My point is the X-Men have used Magneto, Greg, how many times? How many times?
Too many. But they also had Apocalypse. They also had Sebastian Shaw. They also had the
and
Dark
both
Phoenix.
Both of them weren't very good.
And the same could be said for Spider-Man, Nick.
That's not true.
Spider-Man 3, was that any good?
No. Spider-Man 2.
Your
beloved no. Spider-Man 2.
Is one example of using another villain that was good. Just like, what's his name? Man of Steel. Your favorite Superman movie that you think is so much better than the Richard Donner movies.
I do.
Man of Steel. Who was the villain in that, huh?
General Zod. And wasn't that an original creation of Richard Donner for a movie?
No. No.
No?
No. General Zod existed before the movie. Surely. I'm going to look it up right now. I'm almost positive of this. Well, I shouldn't say that. Let me. Yeah, he first appeared in Adventure Comics number 283, created by Robert Bernstein. I wonder if that's the same Robert Bernstein that I know from nothing.
All the President's Men.
Yeah. No.
Anyway, the point remains. You have shitty opinions about the status of
I have
Spider-Man's Rogues Gallery.
You have shitty opinions about the Flash's Rogues Gallery. I said the Flash earlier, and you scoffed at it.
I did.
Said it's a ridiculous notion that the Flash even has a good rogues gallery, which is just as bad as saying Spider-Man doesn't. Listen, I'm not saying I can objectively admit that Spider-Man has a very deep rogues gallery, one of the deepest in comics. However, how much of this rogues gallery ever has appealed to me? Not much. Not much. I haven't liked most of them. I like some, and we're going to talk about the ones that I like. And I'll tell you, Nick, I had so much trouble coming up with five that I really knew about and liked, because a lot of the characters that you would think of as Spider-Man villains, like Electro or the Sandman or
mm-hmm.
or Rhino or
Rhino, Scorp- Mysterio, the Chameleon,
Mysterio,
the Lizard.
I hate the Lizard.
Oh my God!
Fuck the Lizard.
Oh, but you'll. Let me ask you a question.
Fuck
Greg.
The Man-Bat for that matter. I don't like the Man-Bat. They're the same character, essentially, and they both suck.
There's a major difference between the Man-Bat.
Tell me, really? Tell me the difference.
The personal connection between the hero and the character.
Oh, he's his teacher. Everybody is Peter Parker's teacher.
Oh, my God. No, he's not.
Otto Octavius.
Actually, I believe originally he was not Peter's teacher. I don't know what retcons they've done in the years since.
He's his teacher, and he turns... I don't give a shit about that. I've never liked the Lizard. Not even when I was a kid and I was watching the animated series. He was the most boring character to start out the animated series with, and he got better and better after the Lizard episodes when they focused on cool villains like Alistair Smythe and who else? The Spider Slayers, and which was part of Alistair Smythe, I'm aware. People like that. Just keep your Lizard.
Yeah, the animated series went straight to Alistair Smythe, right? They didn't really do Spencer Smythe.
No, I don't remember Spencer Smythe.
Spencer Smythe was his pappy.
Yeah, he might have been on the show, but I just don't remember.
I think he was, actually, but he was just really old. Like,
really
like
old.
When
yeah,
the show started, old. He was old, yeah. So he was never really like the primary.
He was one of those like old companions of Wilson Fisk.
And didn't Alistair Smythe have the Charles Xavier wheelchair?
Yes.
That's right.
Yes,
yeah.
A metal wheelchair.
Big, giant metal wheelchair that would never fit through any door, and yet he got through every door without problems. Yeah. Anyway,
exactly.
Continue.
No, and he had a ponytail too. You know, I got nothing. Anyway, you got all these characters. The problem is, I realized as I thought back on my years of reading Spider-Man, which really good stories involving these villains had I actually read? And there weren't many. So, because when I was a kid, it was mainly the same villains. It was, you know, your villains that'll show up on my list later on. So I had to think of a villain that I've read the stories of, that I feel like I know a decent fair amount about, and that even if I don't really love this villain, I could round out my list with him. Because a lot of these characters I found myself liking the concepts of. I like Scorpion. I think Scorpion's got a really cool look and cool powers. I've always liked Electro. I think Electro's got one of the coolest power sets. But I ultimately couldn't put them on my list in good conscience because I've never read an Electro story I've liked other than that recent New Avengers one that we read, and he wasn't really the main focus of that. And then, you know, the Scorpion, I've never really read a great Scorpion story. So I went at number 5 with a character that I will be mocked relentlessly for putting on my list, and probably deservedly so. And that's a character known as the Jackal.
Wow.
That's right. Now, people may know that in addition to being a Spider-Man villain, the Jackal also served as the manager for the Truth Commission in the World Wrestling Federation. But before he was managing the Truth Commission, he was antagonizing Spider-Man and all of Spider-Man's supporting characters. This is a man, of course, with the real name of Miles Warren. Now, I don't know the words to any of his songs right now, but or what he did in the 60s. All I know about the Jackal, really, is what I read as a kid, which was the Clone Saga. And now the Jackal, you gotta give it to this guy. The Jackal had a damn convoluted plan. And if there's anything this X-Men fan loves, it's a convoluted plan. Now, the Jackal did genetic experiments on people. You know, he was a scientist. He was a man of genius, a biochemist, a cloner, and somehow he also happened to be a talented martial artist and gymnast, it says here. But where would you have time to do all that? I don't know. But anyway, he's experimenting on people. And wouldn't you know it, Nick, who do you think he served as an assistant under?
I know who he served as an assistant under, but I'll let you go ahead.
None other than the High AF Evolutionary. And, you know, his Knights of Wonder Gore and all that. We know, listen, we got a lot to say about the High Evolutionary. And we'll say more about the High Evolutionary at a later time. He wasn't eligible for this list, unfortunately. But, nonetheless, he takes the High Evolutionary's ideas and his ideals and starts working on stuff. And what does he end up doing? Why, he creates clones of Peter Parker. And as it turns out, the Jackal's master plan of cloning Spider-Man would take the course of about 20 years to really play out. And in that time, we would come to learn and then unlearn and then learn again that one of these clones, Ben Reilly, one of these clones was thought to be killed but actually survived and went off into the world with Peter's memories while Peter had his normal life. Another of these clones, Kane, had a terrible scar on his face and may have been the inspiration, now that I'm thinking about it, Nick, mm-hmm. for the World Wrestling Federation's Kane.
Yeah, he was actually fathered by Paul Bearer. He is the bastard clone of Paul Bearer and Peter Parker.
Mm. And so Kane was an evil clone that went out and did bad things because his face was scarred and he was angry at the world. And all these clones descend upon Peter and send his life into madness and insanity. And the Jackal reveals that, in fact, Ben Reilly is the real Peter Parker. And Peter Parker is not the real Peter Parker, as it turns out.
Good Lord.
So imagine the agony that Peter must be going through, Nick. He's just learned that he's not even real. He's not even him. He is a synthetic creation of the Jackal, this evil man from the Orient. He's not from the Orient, who does experimentations upon him. And now Peter goes off to die, presumably, because all the clones are dying everywhere. And Ben Reilly takes over as Spider-Man with the new knowledge that he's actually Peter Parker, although he still calls himself Ben Reilly. Well, son of a bee sting, it turns out that Peter was Peter after all, and Ben was actually Ben, a clone.
Now, how did Thanatos and Poindexter play into all this?
Well, Poindexter did the song "Feeling Hot, Hot, Hot,"
mm-hmm.
and Thanatos
tried to murder Hulk Hogan with a metal head.
And the secret was that they were one and the same.
Mm.
Thanatos was Poindexter, Poindexter was Thanatos. In this case, Reilly was not Parker. Reilly was Reilly, and Parker was Parker. And so, anyway, it drove them all crazy. It messed everybody up for years. You know, Miles Warren is kind of lost to history now. The Jackal's not a big factor in Marvel Comics, but by George, he was a villain that appeared in Spider-Man comics when I was a kid that I read the stories of and liked. So, at the time. So, the Jackal is my number 5 Spider-Man villain because I simply have not encountered any memorable stories involving these other guys.
I bet as you were making this list, you were wishing you had just chosen to do the Spider-Man movie ranking as I proposed.
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
I when you said that you wanted to do the villain countdown, I was like, "Oh, he's going to regret that." And sure enough, you have. Well, in any event, one thing before we get started on my list, you have to understand that as we've discussed here on this show before, my primary form of introduction into Spider-Man was, of course, the Ultimate Universe. So my list kind of is taking into account both the Ultimate and 616 versions of these characters. I didn't really want to have, like, 616 Green Goblin and Ultimate Green Goblin as two separate entries on my list. So I kind of one character and considered all their printed incarnations, for a lack of a better way of describing it. So, with all that being said, here we go, and here's one that's gonna strike at Greg right away because he's gonna be upset I have him so low. At number 5, I'm going Harry Osborn. At number 5, most people would know him as the second Green Goblin from the mainstream universe, the son of Norman Osborn, and most importantly, the key to this character, what makes him a great villain, as I've often said with characters like Harvey Dent, who people know as my favorite Batman villain, his personal connection to Peter. That is the essence of what makes Harry such a great villain when his turn finally comes in the mainstream universe. You get years, decades of he and Peter being not just friends, but best friends, going through life's ups and downs together. Harry being there for him after the death of Gwen Stacy. Harry being there to see him, you know, basically live a large chunk of his life. And then Harry and Norman's, you know, their relationship faltering over the years, and Peter having that knowledge all along that it's largely due to his actions as the Green Goblin, but it's a secret he can't share with Harry because he knows how much it would kill him. We go through all these years, and of course, eventually, the tragic turn happens where Harry begins to become mentally unstable, but takes on the persona of the Green Goblin himself, and eventually meets a very tragic demise in Peter's very arms. Now, years later, they would go and undo that, and I would argue, never should have happened, bro, but that's another discussion for another time. But not just the 616 Harry Osborn. I would be remiss if I didn't throw out a little love to Ultimate Harry Osborn, much the same. This Harry Osborn is portrayed a little bit more as a guy who has everything. You know, he's a little bit, quite frankly, better looking than 616 Harry Osborn.
Now, what do you know about his genitalia?
I have not conversed with his genitalia. You know, he has a little bit more success with the ladies. The one thing he doesn't have, the one consistent thing, that great relationship with his father that leads him to have issues with in terms of confidence. He and Peter strike up a friendship, and Peter is there for him throughout his entire, you know, adolescent life, really, as he is traumatized by the actions that his father is taking. He would eventually be exposed to the Oz serum and become the ultimate hobgoblin. You know, in the Ultimate Universe, the goblins are big Hulk-like creatures rather than just guys in masks. And so he has a different mutation that sees him take on a yellow hue. And he eventually dies at his father's hand. And Peter, once again, much like in the mainstream 616 universe, has to hold his best friend in his arms as he passes away. So Harry Osborn, for that personal connection to Peter, for the way he interacts with Norman Osborn, who will pop up on my list later, outstanding Spider-Man villain and the number 5 entry on my list.
Very good, Nick. I will hold off on comment for now. I did want to make it clear that, in all seriousness, objectively, before anyone gets too mad, yes, Spider-Man has a deep and great rogues gallery. Here are other contenders that didn't make my list.
Oh, God. I didn't even keep track of that.
Electro.
Yep. Was on my Scorpion. Preliminary list. Yes, was on my preliminary list.
Scorpion. Kraven the Hunter.
Was on my preliminary list, but I've never read a lot of the more famous Kraven stories, so I didn't feel qualified putting him on.
We're going to be solving that in the future, hopefully, for both of us.
That is the plan.
And Carnage.
Yes.
So, anyway, those were just the ones that made my preliminary list that I chopped down. Anyway, in favor of the Jackal. At number four, I have none other than a man who has been played multiple times in live action, but never pitted against Spider-Man in live action.
Ah.
Wilson Fisk, a.k.a. the Kingpin of Crime.
I like this selection. I like it so much, I'm going to say nothing about it.
Now, I would argue that there's been a huge missed opportunity. To use wrestling fan terminology, money left on the table. By not utilizing the Kingpin and Spider-Man dynamic in live action to this point. However, the Kingpin for many years was a Spider-Man villain, mm-hmm. predominantly a Spider-Man villain. Over time, though, Nick, we talked about this during our time-honored tradition today, that it feels like over the years, Kingpin has kind of been absorbed by other characters.
Predominantly Daredevil.
Predominantly Daredevil.
Which makes a level of sense, because Daredevil stories tend to be more, you know,
street level.
Street level and kind of doing a noir type form of storytelling. But
also the Punisher.
Right, the Punisher as well. But organized crime can be a part of Spider-Man's world. It doesn't need to be necessarily the entire focus as it is for Daredevil or the Punisher, for example.
I agree with that. My counter to that is some of the great Kingpin stories over the years involved less of the sort of what you think of as street-level organized crime and more corporate crime, more wheeling and dealing in ivory towers, you know, introducing characters like the Rose, who was his son, Richard Fisk. and so while Kingpin has kind of become more of a villain for all the street-level Marvel characters based in New York, which is virtually all of them, bro, Spider-Man's really where it all started, and I think at the there's something inherently fun and entertaining about that Parker humor, that Spider-Man humor, contrasting with the Kingpin's overly serious nature. The Kingpin's a thinking man, a wise man who takes his time to consider every action that he makes, and he has no time to suffer fools. Well, Spider-Man certainly behaves like a fool when he's around the Kingpin. And I think the best example of this that I've ever encountered is that opening couple volumes of Ultimate Spider-Man that we reviewed back in the column days. Brian Michael Bendis writes that, and it's my favorite part of that, because, Nick, I wasn't blown away by it, but my favorite part of it was by far the Spider-Man and Kingpin interactions. Mm-hmm. We talked about that at the time, that it was so funny. It was so great. Spider-Man making constant fat jokes at the expense of the Kingpin. The Kingpin getting increasingly angry as he's moving around his 400 plus pounds of supposedly pure muscle that is disguised as fat, and still having trouble getting his hands on Spider-Man. But if he does get his hands on him, then Spider-Man's cooked, and you know that. So, like, it's just such a fun dynamic that we've seen play out over the years. We've also seen it play out in animation. Kingpin was the main villain of the Spider-Man animated series in the 90s. Kingpin was also the villain in the excellent Into the Spider-Verse film last year, where he was in opposition to both Peter and Miles. So Kingpin is a great foil for Spider-Man, and I understand why he's used by other characters, but I think it would be cool to see him interact with Spider-Man a little bit more Now he may be even nowadays, for all I know. But I would love to see some more great Spider-Man and Kingpin interactions. I think it's a dynamic that in some ways works better for me than the Norman one does at this point, only because the Norman and Peter relationship is so personal, but there's something fun about the impersonal relationship between the Kingpin and Spider-Man. Daredevil and Kingpin have the personal rivalry. Kingpin and Spider-Man just have that adversarial relationship where Kingpin's a bad guy and Spider-Man's a good guy, and Spider-Man just happens to be a good guy that can get under Kingpin's skin really, really easily. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of fun for me, and I've always enjoyed it.
Absolutely. I will have more to say later on, actually. Moving on to my number four, and here we go. Let's go ahead and set the stage for this. At number four, Greg, I have...
Go ahead.
Otto Octavius, also known as Dr. Octopus. Now, before...
Also known as Doc Ock.
Doc Ock, yes. Now, before it's all said and done, I'll give you an opportunity to share your slanderous Doc Ock takes, but we'll hold off on that for now.
No, I'm fine. I understand he's well-liked.
Doc Ock is a really good character. The way it's been described by many people, or some people at least, is he is often what... seen as what could have been for Peter. He's a seemingly normal guy, a really smart guy, who has been picked on throughout his life, who has kind of had a rough upbringing. And when opportunity presents itself, rather than doing the right thing or using his abilities and his gifts to help humanity, he chooses to use them for his own personal gain and his own self-glorification. So he kind of, in some ways, is that mirror image of what Peter might have been had he gone down the wrong path. But over the years, he's tormented Peter in numerous ways, whether it's dating his Aunt May and almost marrying her, whether it is continually being the one guy who can one-up Peter in terms of intellect. What people forget oftentimes that Spider-Man is not just a physical character. Peter Parker is a borderline genius, and his scientific acumen has been a major part of some of his best stories, and yet Otto seems to be the one guy who is consistently able to get one over on him. And probably no example greater than that, even though I'm, as you know, Greg, no great fan of this run, but certainly a way to get Doc Ock over as a major villain. He actually, in recent years, was able to steal Peter Parker's body, take over the body of Peter Parker and become the superior Spider-Man, push Peter out of his own psyche, because Doc Ock was ailing from cancer and was able to, through convoluted comic book means, put his consciousness into Peter's body and lived years as Peter Parker, you know, taking actions that Peter Parker never would have taken. And this really steps up that rivalry between the two to a whole other level. So for a combination of factors, the flaunting of the Aunt May relationship, the scientific acumen, and most recently, stealing the man's damn body, Doc Ock.
The fact that his name is Otto.
What's wrong with Otto?
Nothing. I'm just saying that's the fact that that's another reason to in his favor.
Absolutely.
Like the great artist Otto Schmidt.
Indeed.
No, you know my stance on Doc Ock. I've never liked Dr. Octopus in the comics. From the time I was reading comics, I remember thinking when I would encounter the character Dr. Octopus, I would say, A, I think that's a dumb name. B, I think he's got one of the worst looks of any villain I've ever seen in my life. My God, the guy looked like... This is what I thought as a kid now. The guy looked like old man Elton John. He looked like a 50-year-old Elton John. Mm-hmm. And was not intimidating in the least, had a gaudy green and yellow outfit. Just a man out of time to me. Did not look cool, did not look updated for the 90s, did not look sleek in any way, did not have... And I know he's a bad guy, maybe that's the idea, but it just wasn't interesting to me at all. Never was. I never encountered a version. Hated him on the animated series. Never encountered a version of him that I found remotely interesting. Well, that's a bit harsh. I shouldn't say remotely. That I found interesting until Spider-Man 2, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 2. Finally, they gave me a hook. They gave me the that gravitas that I needed behind the Dr. Octopus character. They gave me something beyond I'm evil. I'm an evil mad scientist. And so I latched onto that performance by Alfred Molina in that movie. And still my favorite Spider-Man villain in the movies. But ultimately, I have to go off of what I've read in the comics. And in the comics, he just never did anything for me. Now, that's just my opinion.
It is. But, you know, I listed off all his more mainstream accomplishments. I must, of course, take a moment to acknowledge the character in the Ultimate Universe, which is really why he finds himself on this list. In the Ultimate Universe, he is revealed as kind of the brains behind the operation of Oscorp. He is the one responsible for the creation of the Oz formula. He is the one, it is implied at various points, who may have been responsible for the accident that wound up creating the Green Goblin. He is the one who is revealed as the mastermind behind the ultimate version of the Clone Saga, who has been tormenting Peter from afar for years, and taking pride in the fact that he can get at Peter anytime he wants to, and that Peter is arguably his creation thanks to his exposure to the Oz formula. So lots of great stuff in the Ultimate Universe with Doc Ock, and just cements his place on my list.
Very good. Very good, Mr. Lau. Let me move on to my own iconic, arguably the most iconic Spider-Man villain here at number three for me.
Mm-mm.
And this is a character who has hair that resembles a Satan athletic object named a basketball. He has, he's a rich, powerful businessman. He's also the most overdone Spider-Man villain. However, there's no denying his greatness as a villain, much like the Joker or Lex Luthor. I give to you, ladies and gentlemen, Stormin' Norman Osborn, a.k.a. the Green Goblin. So, why does Norman Osborn make my list? Well, it'd probably be easier to say why he's not at number one. Simply because these other two characters in front of him connected more with me as a kid. And because I think it's kind of diminishing returns with Norman always coming back with variations of the same scheme to get at Peter. But Norman Osborn's a great comic book villain. One of the earliest Spider-Man villains. I have not been reading the 60s Marvel as you have, Nick, but certainly one of the influencing factors in a young Peter Parker's life. And, of course, the Green Goblin is responsible for the greatest tragedy in Peter's career as Spider-Man, which is the death of his girlfriend and the love of his life to that point, Gwen Stacy.
Mm-hmm.
Norman Osborn is directly responsible for that. And that's something that you can't take back. That's something that will always be there, will always haunt Peter's subconscious, will always be in the back of his mind, the fact that this is the guy that killed Gwen, that snuffed her life out before she had a chance to even grow to adulthood, before we had a chance to see what we had between us. Norman has popped back up multiple times over the years to cause problems for Peter, whether it was as the Green Goblin or as Norman Osborn or even as the Iron Patriot or whatever during Dark Reign. He has constantly caused problems for Spider-Man and his friends, presumably Superman as well, which is what I was about to say for some reason. And he's just constantly a thorn in the side. Every time, you know, Norman Osborn, I equate him to the Stefano DiMera of Spider-Man comics. Every time you think he's dead, the Phoenix rises once again, and he comes back to haunt Peter and his family and his loved ones, whether it's almost killing Aunt May seemingly a dozen times, whether it's you know, killing Gwen Stacy, whether it's injuring Mary Jane, the new love of Peter's life after Gwen, whether it's secretly, spoiler alert, secretly financing everything the Jackal did to set up the Clone Saga, to mess with Spider-Man and make him think that he wasn't real, whether it's then forcing Spider-Man to watch his clone brother get vaporized into dust by a pumpkin bomb. Well, as a result of getting hit with a pumpkin bomb and a clone virus, just to screw with Peter. Whether it's revealing to Peter that Gwen Stacy and he had an affair years earlier that led to twins. I mean, this guy's just not a
you
nice
kinda
guy.
You buried the lead there a bit.
This guy's just not a nice man. Not a nice man. And he's also in recent years kind of been they've kind of used him as sort of the Lex Luthor stand-in for the Marvel Universe at times, where he gained power in the U.S. government and sort of got his own licensed form of the Avengers on his side, basically. So this is a guy that has also transitioned into being more of a widespread Marvel villain, although at the end of the day, he is still Spider-Man's most personal foe, his most heated rival, and the guy who is probably going to be around until the end of Spider-Man comics. Every writer is going to want to do their Norman Osborn story, and that's just the way it is. So, Norman Osborn, number 3.
Outstanding. I will withhold comment for now.
You're going to run out of comments to withhold.
I am going to run out of comments to withhold. Now we arrive at a controversial selection from me. So,
oh
Greg,
my.
Prepare to make an argument here.
I'm going to prepare. I don't know if I will, but...
For my number 3, I'm going with J. Jonah Jameson.
Oh, that's horse shit. That's horse shit. He's not a supervillain.
Is it villains or is it supervillains?
He's not... He is an antagonist, mm-hmm. but I would not classify him. How many Spider-Man stories are there where J. Jonah Jameson is the villain? Where Spider-Man has to fight and conquer J. Jonah Jameson?
You know how earlier we were discussing the Scorpion or the Spider Slayers in many
sure.
instances, correct?
Absolutely, yep.
All directly created, essentially, direct creations, directly responsible is J. Jonah Jameson for those creations. The financier, the bankroller, the money man behind it all. And not to mention, so much of Spider-Man's character is defined not by physical threats, but by emotional threats. And I would argue J. Jonah Jameson's assault on his public persona, his assault on Spider-Man's reputation, has arguably caused Spider-Man more emotional grief than just about any character not named Norman Osborn. He is constantly a thorn in Peter Parker's side. He is constantly... one of the people who is most responsible for Peter continuing to question himself. How many times have we seen that classic scene of maybe everything Jonah says is right about me? He is the one guy who is constantly in Peter's head, and he's constantly terrified that all the things that Jameson says about him, that he's a menace, might actually be true.
You know what, Nick? You've won me over. Can I take off the Jackal from my list and replace him with J. Jonah Jameson?
I'll allow it.
All right, let the record show the Jackal is no longer on my list of top 5 Spider-Man villains.
Is he ever the main focus of a story? Rarely. I'm sure there are some out there. I would have to go back and look. I haven't read every Spider-Man story in history.
Spider-Man!
But he does drive so much of the narrative of so many Spider-Man stories, I think you have to consider him a villain, at least as it relates to Spider-Man. Now, Peter Parker himself... you know, he and Jonah at varying times have had this begrudging, you know, kind of borderline respect for one another. And there have certainly been more sympathetic takes on Jonah that have been introduced, especially in the Ultimate Universe. But really, J. Jonah Jameson has caused the dude so much heartache and grief over the years. I think you kind of have to count him in the upper pantheon. I mean, think about how much better Peter's life would probably be if J. Jonah Jameson weren't in it. He'd be a happier person, and he'd probably be making a lot more money and wouldn't have constant financial problems
well,
the way he does.
All that stuff you just said is true, but think about it and imagine if it's Hal Jordan without Carol Ferris in his life.
Yes, but, well, I say this. I don't know this to be true. The difference is Peter Parker ain't balling J. Jonah Jameson. That we know of.
We don't know that.
That we know of.
I've got some ideas if Marvel wants to give me a call.
So, yeah, controversial selection for me, but I'm going J. Jonah Jameson as number 3.
I like it. That's outside-the-box thinking, Nick, and I like to reward outside-the-box thinking.
Now, wait a minute. You went from his horse shit to that's outside-the-box thinking, and I like it. Which one is it?
You wanted me to argue. I didn't care. You wanted me to argue. You wanted me to argue, so I argued. And now I've come around. You made a strong, compelling argument, Nick.
Well, thank you.
I wasn't prepared to battle it because I didn't have that much passion about the subject. We're not arguing about the price of lipstick in Antarctica or something. Jeez. Which is 75 cents, by the way. Number two. My number two is, I'm trying to think of this. No, I would not have been reading that far back. Number two was my favorite, maybe my favorite villain when I was a kid, probably. Along with the number one back and forth, but certainly number two was the coolest. And I think number two, of all of these characters, number two has the best design, the coolest design of any of these characters. That's because he was designed by none other than the legendary Todd McFarlane. My number two Spider-Man villain is Eddie Brock, a.k.a. Venom. So
I like it, and I thought for sure he'd be on my list, and yet he's not. Spoiler alert.
I feel like every character, and we've seen this play out in the MCU to varying results, every character, great superhero, needs to have his opposite, his sort of reverse version of himself. For instance, you know, I'm thinking of someone like, I don't know, Captain America having Captain Arab in the Ultimates. You know, your other side of the coin, you know, Batman has Hush or some of these other, Bane is a great example of sort of a flip side of Batman. Superman has Bizarro. The Flash has, well, the reverse Flash. Green Lantern has Sinestro. Venom is kind of that for Spider-Man. He is the inverse, whereas Spider-Man is all heart and brains and compassion for his fellow man, Venom is all hunger and envy and jealousy and rage. And the idea of taking Eddie Brock's built-up jealousies and built-up insecurities about his job as a journalist with regards to comparing himself to Peter Parker, taking that and almost drawing upon the earliest adventures of Spider-Man. I know from listening to the Marvel Age podcast where Peter Parker himself was very jaded and bitter when he was in high school, as he felt marginalized and picked on. Well, this is kind of the inverse of that, where so does Eddie Brock. But unlike Peter, Eddie never breaks good. Eddie breaks bad. And he hooks up with this alien symbiote who is looking for someone just like Eddie. And together, they form this ravenous creature known as Venom that has the ability to be undetected by Spider-Man's spider sense. He can sneak up on Spider-Man whenever he wants to. He can literally be this horror movie monster for Spider-Man comics, which he was in the day. He was a horror movie monster who would show up, who could forget the image of Venom showing up at Aunt May's to menace Aunt May. Who can forget Venom shocking Spider-Man in his own apartment? You know, they have these fights, and it gets to the point where he's stronger than Spider-Man. He's faster than Spider-Man. Spider-Man has no way to defeat this guy hand-to-hand. He has to use his ingenuity and come up with a way to beat Venom. And he does through the use of the bell tower or through the use of the sonic gun from Reed Richards and other stuff. So, like, he finds ways to beat Venom. But Venom is that character that just...
And then you have to fight Reed Richards' giant metal dog whenever you're trying to get the sonic gun from the Fantastic Four headquarters.
Absolutely. And then if you do that, occasionally the Demon Goblin will show up.
Yeah, carry on.
Cloak and Dagger.
Cloak and Dagger.
Might show up to help you.
Jean Grey, I think.
Maybe. I don't know. And then the game has like 85 levels to it and feels like it never ends.
And you never actually beat it.
Ever beats it. Right. So all that stuff adds up to Venom being awesome. He was also super fun to play on the video games. I can't imagine picking Spider-Man in those games because Venom was so fun to play as. He had his own series in Lethal Protector. He was great in the animated series. He's just a fun character. And, again, so many of these Spider-Man villains do have great designs, but Venom is such a great and original and interesting design for a character. and one that I think, whether people like him or not, Venom captured the public's imagination at a time when comics were at their most popular, and really feels like he's one of those characters that I think is ingrained in the mythos now at this point. Like, he's not to the level of the Green Goblin in terms of that sort of iconic character that you use over and over again.
Well, I would argue that's probably predominantly because they love the character so much that they have gone out of their way to really lean heavier into the anti-hero stuff in recent years. Like, really since about 1995 or so, they haven't really used Venom very much as a straight-up villain, and I think that has...
They created Carnage specifically, right. I think, because they were transitioning Venom into the more the anti-authoritarian babyface role.
Right.
So, to appeal to people, kids like me, primarily young, primarily
male,
and primarily defiant.
Yeah.
Young men. And
when I think of young Greg, defiant, that's the word I think of.
Hey,
the guy who doesn't like Home Alone because Macaulay Culkin was too mean to his parents.
He was mean to his parents. He should have been a nice boy. I was a nice boy, but I've always liked to live vicariously.
If you had been alive in 1981, Bob Backlund would have been right up your alley, I feel.
Well, Bob Backlund was a family man. But I like to live vicariously through these comic book characters, and Venom just always had such a cool look to him and such a cool appeal that, like, and I've always enjoyed the story. I think the story of the symbiote's really good, or the symbiote is good. And so, so Venom's my number two. Love it or leave it.
Yeah, Venom was my last cut. He was my number six. So a little surprised, honestly, when I sat down to make this list that he didn't wind up making it on there. But anyway, moving on to my number two, and it's a character that Greg's already talked about, and that character is Wilson Fisk, a.k.a. the Kingpin. Greg has given you a rundown of, you know, who this character is and why he matters so eloquently. The only thing I'd really like to add here is that in addition to having just a great comedic dynamic, especially in the Ultimate Universe, as Greg referenced earlier, the reason I love this character so much is because he presents a problem that Peter, he can't use science to solve, and he can't use his fists to solve. And so Peter is often at a loss with what can he really do to Wilson Fisk. He can go beat him up and leave him for the cops, and a week later he's back on the streets because money and power buys you influence. And
yes, and to quote the made-for-TNT movie from the 90s about George Wallace and his wife Lurleen Burns Wallace, money and power, power and money, that's all you care about.
And that's an apt description for Wilson Fisk. Peter is often, you know, especially in the Ultimate Universe, and even someone in the 616 universe as well, Peter can be a bit naive at times, and he thinks that the world should work the way the world should work, and he doesn't really operate with an understanding of how the world does work. He thinks that if he gathers evidence and puts Fisk away, that he should stay there for years, that Fisk should be out of his hair and not be able to reach him and not be able to hurt people anymore. And often that just isn't the case. And so he really provides an interesting ongoing challenge for Peter to bump up against. And it's one that I have enjoyed in virtually any incarnation I've read. But you mentioned, Greg, the comedic interactions between the two in the Ultimate Universe. I'll give you a little snippet that's one of my favorites. It's a scene from, I don't remember the exact issue of Ultimate Spider-Man, but they've had an ongoing rivalry for some time. It's midway through the run, maybe in like the 50s or 60s in terms of issue number. And Peter breaks into the Kingpin's estate. They have a little conversation, and as he's leaving, the Kingpin says, "Young man, did you web my feet to the floor?" And Peter goes, "Maybe." And the Kingpin says, "What possible satisfaction could you get from that?" And Spider-Man says, "See, you don't understand me, and I don't understand you." And then he just swings away. And it's outstanding. I mean, just great stuff. Love this character dynamic. Love this character. And I guess, again, because of the different kind of challenge he presents to Peter, he's my number two Spider-Man villain.
And he's so haughty.
Mm, indeed.
Well,
I still hope one day we will get Vincent D'Onofrio, Kingpin, and Tom Holland, Spider-Man sharing the screen.
I do too, but I would not hold my breath for it.
I am not. I'm not holding my breath for it. That would be insane.
Some people can hold their breath a long time.
Some people can.
Michael Phelps. Superman. Namor the Submariner.
In any event, I don't think he holds his breath. I think he's just gills.
Yeah, whatever. It's all the same. Only the names will change. My number one character. We've reached the crescendo of the countdown here. My number one character is one that Nick's already talked about as well. And it is a character that owes its existence to an earlier character on my countdown, and one that I suspect is about to be on Nick's. My number one character is Green Goblin 2, Harry Osborn, the son of Norman Osborn. Nick already addressed this character and talked about his magnificent story over the years. You know, and I've often talked about Nightwing being my favorite comic book character, which he is. And I've talked about being a big West because these are characters that we got to see as comic book fans truly grow into their roles, like, and show a rare amount of character growth, which almost never happens in superhero comics. Well, Harry Osborn's kind of the mirror of that. For the villain side, Harry is a character that we've had a chance to see grow from being Peter Parker's best friend all the way through relationships and marriages and having kids, and all the way around to bouts of schizophrenia and bouts of mental imbalance, and then finally becoming that which his father once was, Spider-Man's greatest foe, the Green Goblin. It's such a great character arc. It's such an incredible journey to watch a character go on. It would be like, Nick, if we had a chance to watch over the course of 10 years as Harvey Dent transitions into Two-Face. Mm-hmm. Instead of just picking him up as Two-Face or seeing it told in one story. We got to see this Harry Osborn transformation over the course of about 20 years. And it all culminates in what is my all-time favorite Spider-Man issue, a Spider-Man issue I gifted from my collection to our good friend Russell Sellers, Spectacular Spider-Man number 200 by J.M. DeMatteis and Sal Buscema. And it's still my favorite Spider-Man story to this day. It is so emotional. If you've never read it, I recommend anybody to give it a chance because it is one of those books that will wreck you emotionally, that will give you a sense of finality and conclusion in a way that a great movie can, the way that something like Logan did, the way that something like Avengers Endgame did. It really wraps up their relationship so beautifully and so perfectly, and yet so sadly. It is a sad story, but it also leaves you with a sense of hope because he makes a heroic choice at the end of his life that separates him from his father. So Harry Osborn is a very important character to me. I think he is the most fascinating of Spider-Man's supporting characters, and also happens to be my favorite villain in the Spider-Man mythos, because it is I said that Norman was the most personal villain earlier, but really that's all on a superficial he's evil and I'm good level. I think that Harry takes that even to a different level of personal connection, because it when Harry is the Green Goblin, he hates Peter with the same vigor and fire that Norman hates Peter, but Peter cannot bring himself to hate Harry the way that he hates Norman, because it's his best friend underneath all of that, and he blames himself for allowing it to get to this point. It's that guilt that's riddled in there, and I just love this character. My favorite Spider-Man villain, one of my favorite Marvel characters, really. And so, I like you, Nick. I think it was unfortunate that they decided to bring Harry back with the Brand New Day situation. I just think that was unnecessary, and luckily, as somebody that doesn't read the modern Spider-Man comics, it hasn't done anything to lessen the impact of Spectacular 200. That will always be there and will always have a powerful value to me. The same way it would if, whether I was still reading or not, because the story is always going to be there. But I think that Peter's story it's an interesting bit of tapestry in there to have that story of Harry's redemption, his fall and his redemption and his heroic death. And I think it's okay sometimes to leave well enough alone.
Absolutely. And arguably, well enough should be left alone more often in comics. But moving on to my number one, an extremely anticlimactic choice, but I would argue the correct choice. Sometimes the obvious choice is the right one. In this case, I believe that is so. And so my number one is, of course, Norman Osborn, a.k.a. the Green Goblin. Greg kind of laid it out for you, all the various deeds he has done to Peter over the years, most notably murdering Gwen Stacy, being responsible for, I would argue, the death that has had more of an influence on who Peter is today than even Uncle Ben dying. Uncle Ben defined Peter's first 20 years as a, or first 15 to 20 years as a character. Gwen Stacy has defined the years since. And again, let's not sleep on the fact that the man impregnated Gwen Stacy with twins that we found out years later, which was just a terrifying image that we'll never be able to get out of our brains, no matter.
Oh, that hair though. That hair.
That hair and Norman's oh grimace was just one of those things that I cared to have never seen. But
oh, that popped me.
But go look it up. He's doing the oh grimace, I promise. I would be remiss if I did not mention the exploits of the ultimate version of this character. Ultimate Norman Osborn is there from the time Spider-Man is born, from the time Peter is first bitten by that spider, all the way up until Peter's final moments. He is the one threat that continues to torment Peter over and over again for years, for a decade essentially, of printed comics. What is actually about, I think, 3 or 4 years of in-continuity story. He threatens Peter's family. He threatened Peter's well-being. He threatens his friends. He is ultimately responsible for Peter losing his best friend, Harry Osborn. And Ultimate Norman's reaction to this is, I don't care, you are my real son and my greatest creation. Because he views Spider-Man as his son, as his greatest legacy. He is the one who is obsessed with Peter to a degree that no matter what prison he finds himself in, no matter what situation he finds himself in, S.H.I.E.L.D. can't hold him. The Ultimates can't hold him. Nothing can be done to stop Norman Osborn from constantly coming after Peter Parker. And it is there on the front lawn of Aunt May's home in Queens that Peter Parker stands one last time between Norman Osborn and the people he cares so much about, and Peter gives his life in the act of defeating Norman Osborn. He is able to take down Norman. He's able to protect Mary Jane. He's able to protect Aunt May. But it costs him everything. And he dies the hero's death at the hands of Norman Osborn. So combine the 616 and the Ultimate Universe together, and for me, you have hands down the greatest Spider-Man villain of all time.
He gave his life to protect Aunt May and Mary Jane. And the next night, he came out on Raw with a Band-Aid.
If only.
It was like
a year and a half later he showed up in the bushes.
Got a Band-Aid on his forehead. You know something, Austin? Anyway.
He had a longer, douchier haircut, and they never really addressed why he was back.
He was wearing a leather jacket over a jean jacket over a leather jacket.
I don't remember what he was wearing, but it's possible.
Well, there you have it, folks. We have regaled you with all of our stories, and not for nothing, Taz. Our next episode, I think, if I'm not mistaken, is actually going to give us a chance to revisit unique version.
Our next episode will be our very special review of Spider-Man Far From Home.
Ah, well, then the one after that will give us a chance to revisit a very unique take on Norman Osborn.
We've been looking forward to this for weeks. Greg, you must understand, people, has been a long-time detractor, ever since I've known him, has been a detractor of the Willem Dafoe portrayal of Norman Osborn in Sam Raimi's 2002 Spider-Man. And yet,
that's correct.
In recent months, every time that portrayal has come up, Greg has laughed or had something positive to say about it. I can feel the tides of time shifting in the favor of Mr. Dafoe and his Green Goblin, and we are going to see if that if that trend continues when we revisit the film in a couple weeks. But again, before then, very special review of Spider-Man Far From Home, which, as you know, Greg, I am pumped for.
Yes, me and I am as well. I wasn't as big on Homecoming as you, but I think this one looks awesome. So I'm very, very excited to see how it all goes. Well, let us know feedback on my crappy list and Nick's better list by tweeting us at gphillips8652 or at nickduke87. Shoot us an email, gregp@placetobenation.com, nickd@placetobenation.com. And join the Place to Be Nation Comics Facebook page. We'll be sharing this post. And hopefully we'll have whatever word I was about to say. I've lost track. I got a
feedback.
Message that distract me. Feedback. Some feedback. Yes, that's quite right. But I guess that's about it for us this week, Nick. Like I said, this is an abbreviated edition. We're going to let the folks go here and see you next time, right?
Absolutely. But before we head out, we must end this show as we have every show for some time now with a little musical performance from WWE Hall of Famer Jim Ross. And as many people know, we've been celebrating the Independence Day this week. We've celebrated the 4th of July, celebrated our great country here in the good old U.S. of A.
That's right.
And so here to sing one of his favorite patriotic tunes is Jim Ross.
Folks, I just want to say that this song is dedicated to the men and women who have fought for this country over the years, particularly Ben Franklin, Aretha Franklin, Franklin Roosevelt, Franklin Richards, Richards on the internet, and of course, Little Richard. If tomorrow all the things were gone, all of them, that I worked for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife, I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, because the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an Oklahoman, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. They died by wrestling Danny Hodge. And I'd gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. Because there ain't no doubt in my ass that I love this land. God bless the U.S. of A. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee. Across the plains of Texas, by God, the rattlesnake, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston, and New York to L.A., where's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say that I am proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free, and I won't forget the men who died who gave that right to me. And I would gladly stand up next to you and defend her ass still today. Because there ain't no doubt in my fanny that I love this land. Love it now. God bless the USA. And I'm proud to be an Oklahoman, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget Hodge and Dr. Death, who gave that right to me. And I would gladly stand up right next to your ass and defend her still today, because there ain't no doubt that I love this land. God bless the USA.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following. Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. The Place to Be Nation wrestling feed. We dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture.